And welcome to another edition of Book Talk. I'm Stephen Ussery, and I'm happy to welcome Vicki Fee back to the program today. Vicki was a longtime journalist in Western Tennessee, but now calls the Upper Peninsula of Michigan home. To help with homesickness, she began writing the Live and Die in Dixie mystery series. And today we'll be talking about the third installment, One Fate in the Grave, which is published by Kensington. So, Vicki, how did Liv McKay get into the party and event planning business?
You know, I think she enjoys a good time. And she's very social with people, good with people. I think she's good in a crisis, which maybe she didn't know that was going to be part of her job, but it's actually a big part of her job because something goes wrong with every party. Somebody doesn't show up.
Nothing goes as planned.
You know, it never does. And she's part counselor because dealing with the people planning the party, the clients, often it's a husband and wife or mother and daughter, or and, you know, the family kind of tension can come in there. And she has to arbitrate and kind of make everybody happy, especially the person who's signing the checks. And so she's developed that skill, but she has that natural ability, I think.
Also managing expectations and guiding people to something they can afford, I'm guessing, is a big part of it, too.
Yeah. But she'll go out on a limb to do some kind of crazy request, you know, if that's what the client wants.
She had a big emergency in the new book with the baby shower she was planning.
Yes. You know, you shouldn't plan the baby shower too close to the due date. But sometimes that happens. So the mom-to-be had a nice brunch before she had to go check on the baby at the hospital. So
I'd never heard of the game. I Broke My Water, or what was the name of the game they were
My
playing?
My Water Broke.
My Water Broke.
Yeah, I actually saw that game. So you put ice cubes with little things in a baby in one of the cubes, and then they're in various drinks, and whoever's ice cube melts and the baby pops out, they say, "My water broke," and they win a prize.
Oh, it's kind of like the king cake.
Yeah, yeah. And she also played the other game, which I've played. You've probably not been to that many baby showers, Stephen, I'm guessing.
Just a couple.
Okay, so it's not unusual to have the one where you fill in the bag. You pass around and you fill in the bag to try to figure out what the baby items are. And you usually come up with some kind of unusual ones. And the person who writes down, gets the most right, wins a prize. They also played that one at the shower.
I did just go to a gender reveal party last year for the first time.
Oh, okay.
And they had filled a balloon with either pink or blue paint. And they put the balloon on a board, and they had to throw darts at it. And when it popped, the color splashed, and they figured out.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool. I like that. I know a lot of people have the inside of the cake tinted either blue or pink, and they do the reveal kind of that way once they cut into the cake.
And they had pink and blue clothespins, and we put them on our collars to show which gender we thought it would be when it was finally revealed.
Yeah.
So we had a little voting system that way.
You had a 50-50 shot.
Yeah. More importantly, for what's going on with your series, how did Liv get into the murder-solving business?
She stumbled across it literally, you know, when she found her first bodies. There have been a few since then. But, you know, in the first book, she was looking into a deep freezer to measure for ice sculptures, and there just happened to be a body in there. And in the trash can was a matching body. But all of the murders, the way that she gets involved is because someone she cares about comes under suspicion. And in the most recent book, it's her mother's brand new fiancé, Earl. And obviously, they've just gotten engaged, and her mom is not going to be very happy if the groom doesn't get to come to the wedding. So Liv's kind of roped into looking for another suspect to give the sheriff.
It's gotten to the point where people in town are even starting to make jokes about her being too close to these bodies when they turn up dead.
Yeah. Yeah, especially the sheriff. It's like he insinuates that bodies show up wherever she is, and she starts to get a little upset about this, but, you know. At the same time, people are also beginning to recognize her kind of haphazard ability to find the killer. So it's kind of double-sided. Your bad luck, dead bodies show up around you, but also you're able to catch the killer.
The dead body that kicks off at the 4th of July celebration there in Dixie, Tennessee, is a city councilman named Bubba Rowland. He's not going to be missed by too many people, it seems.
No.
So how does he keep getting elected if he's such an unpopular character?
He helps himself, it seems, on the business side, which means he's probably helping some other folks, too. And, you know, in small-town politics, sometimes that's the way it works. There's a little bit of graft going on. And if you know the right people, you can get elected.
So it's at the very end of the 4th of July celebration, and Liv has had to put together this festival for Dixie. What kind of experience was that for her?
Okay, so Liv wasn't itching to do this. The mayor had asked her if she would kind of coordinate all the various competitions and judgings and just pull the whole thing together for this annual celebration. So she quoted the board a price that she thought they would never pay. And when they didn't bat an eye, she kind of suspected maybe she had taken on too much. Yeah, all the craziness, the beauty pageant, the kind of cutthroat jam and jelly competition, all of that. But she pulled it off, she thought. She thought everything had gone as smoothly as it could. And then after the fireworks, Bubba shows up dead.
But there were a couple of controversies even before Bubba turns up dead in a porta potty. First, there's the chocolate cake contest.
Yes.
And how her mom could ever lose a chocolate cake contest is beyond most people.
Yeah. Again, I think in small towns, and I think this is true because I worked as a reporter in small towns for years, there's kind of a certain sense, sometimes the same person wins over and over and over, but, you know, sometimes there's this sense among the judges who are your neighbors and friends that you should spread the love around. And so sometimes you might win first or you might win second, and then sometimes maybe one of the judges is a good friend. You know, so there are a lot of good cooks, and Mama didn't take it too hard when she came in second.
And then there's another controversy over the beauty pageant. It seems Bubba Rowland had been nosing around and trying to throw his influence around during the beauty pageant, too.
Yes, Bubba's niece ends up winning, which was kind of a surprise to a lot of people. Not that she wasn't a pretty girl, but in the talent competition, there seemed to be a clear winner, a very talented singer-songwriter, who ended up coming in second. And some people had seen Bubba talking to one or two of the judges and wondered if maybe he had some undue influence in that area. And so that didn't make this runner-up very happy, or her family very happy.
Her mother, Lynn, actually got pretty liquored up and started throwing fingers around.
Yeah, she had an ugly confrontation, a tearful confrontation, I should say, with Bubba. And her mom, the contestant's grandmother, had to kind of pull her away from the scene.
Now, Bubba was shot dead while he was in the John.
Yeah.
And so how did no one hear what was going on when he got shot?
Well, someone shrewdly planned and set up for him to get shot during the fireworks. So it was after dark, which gave people better cover to set up for a shot. And also the explosions covered the sound of the rifle.
He still had several other people that he had gotten on the wrong side of or had disliked him very much that might be suspicious. He was running for city council against this environmentalist named Flack. Flack is not exactly a good representation of the environmental movement, is he?
No, he really wasn't. And he had political ambitions. And the two of them had had a very public confrontation earlier in the day because Flack was passing out posters and pamphlets that were pretty unflattering of Bubba, his opponent in this race. And the men didn't actually come to fisticuffs, but there had been some little chest thumping, and the local deputy had to break it up.
Then we have another fella who's kind of weird and on the scene. He's from out of town. He's from Memphis, so he can't be good.
He's from the big city.
And he's a real estate developer named Aaron Rankin. And has there ever been a decent, good real estate developer ever in a mystery novel?
No, I don't think so. If they're not actually shady, they're at least suspicious because we don't know these people. They're from the outside. And we don't really know what's going on early in the book with him and Bubba, if maybe Bubba's got a financial interest in this development and maybe paying this guy off to get it approved, to get all the approvals through, because the environmentalists, or at least some of them, are opposed to this particular development.
When Liv goes and does some investigations, she's talking to people about this proposed development, and a lot of it doesn't make financial sense. What's kind of on the weird side about this development?
Liv's office is above a real estate office. In fact, her landlord owns the real estate business. He's a broker, and one of her friends is an agent. And so she asked her friend about, so what's the deal with this development? And Wynette, who is often the voice of common sense in the Live and Die books, which we need on occasion. And she tries to kind of pull Liv back from being too nosy and getting into danger. But she tells her, as a real estate agent, it doesn't add up to her because they're building too much. She doesn't think that Dixie can support the size of the development. And the types of businesses, it's a mixed use, which makes sense, but sometimes not in a small town. She thinks these businesses, like a car wash, is not going to do well. So she just has her suspicions that it's not a real good financial investment. Plus, Liv's landlord, who has got the first dime he ever made, but he invests in everything that makes sense. He has not invested in it. And that makes Wynette especially suspicious, because she thinks if there's money to be made, he would have his hand in the pot.
I remember reading a few years ago, I can't remember which writer said it, said mysteries aren't necessarily about justice. They're about restoring order in a community.
Right.
And so what does order look like in Dixie, Tennessee?
At the end of every cozy mystery, things return to normal as things get in Dixie. Basically, we feel safe again. We feel like the killer's been put away. We're back to life as normal, and Liv's life is a little bit quirky to begin with, but it's safe, and people like and look out for each other in Dixie. So I think that's the sense of order and safety and community is kind of restored.
In Cozies, the community, the people around, our amateur sleuth, are as important as the crimes are. How much time do you spend on developing the world and getting these characters that we care about from book to book, as opposed to really hardcore plotting and bumping people off?
It's Liv's story. Basically, we enter into Liv's world, and Di is her best friend, and Larry Joe is her husband, and all the relationships in this quirky little town that she lives in. And a murder intrudes into her world. In a series, we have these characters we love to spend time with. That's why people keep coming back and reading book after book, is really for the characters. But we give our heroine, our main character, something interesting and adventurous and a little bit dangerous to do. We break up her routine with these murders. In my case, there's two parties in every book, because Liv's a party planner, and we have tips in the back of the book. So in the midst of planning these parties and putting them on, she also ends up with a dead body, and she's got to figure out who did it.
In cozy books, it's often remarked on, if there were that many murders in such a small town, it would be national news. But also, I want to know, how does she make a living as a party planner in a town as small as Dixie and support Holly, who's her assistant?
Right. We do mention in the book that Holly works for much less than she's worth. She kind of doesn't need the money. She's moved back to Dixie after her retired husband passed away, to her family home, and she enjoys the work. Liv, fortunately, I think her husband's trucking business must do pretty well, that she doesn't have to completely support them. But we do branch out. I mean, it's the whole county. We mentioned that she's trying to get more business in Hartville, which is the biggest town in the county, in addition to Dixie. And there's some wealthy folks. She gets some kind of big events and also gets hired by the town for some of these. So, yeah, she makes good money, but, you know, she has to have time to investigate. And it cuts into her business at times.
And how far away is Dixie supposed to be from Memphis?
I think we say 45 miles. We don't say exactly which direction. I kind of have it in my head, but I don't want to say exactly, because I worked for years as a newspaper reporter in a lot of small suburban towns near Memphis, and I didn't realize I was doing research at the time. Now, none of the characters are based on a particular person, so I say they're fictional but authentic. And sometimes people in other parts of the country who haven't spent much time in the South, they'll say, you know, your characters are really over the top. And I'm like, no, they're really not. I know people like this.
But do you see those people's faces, or maybe celebrities' faces, when you're casting characters, so you can kind of see their reactions? At least in your mind, are they based on people where you can see their faces?
You know, I don't always have a clear picture of the face. But I do hear voices. I hate to admit, I hear voices in my head, and they have Southern accents. But yeah, I live and die. When I'm writing dialogue, I do hear them in different voices. I'll tell you this, I've never told anybody, but Di sounds a little bit like Sissy Spacek in my head.
From which movie?
I'm not sure.
You live currently in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Yeah.
How do you keep a hold on what's going on down south here in the Mid-South when you're living all the way up there?
Okay, now I'm not really writing current events. When they venture into Memphis, the places are real for the most part. So they've had, they've eaten at the arcade restaurant, for instance. And I do go online and check their menu and to make sure that they still serve some of the things I remember from there, you know, that kind of thing. But I'm not covering current events. So this is all kind of just memory because I grew up in Memphis and I worked in West Tennessee in all these little towns. So it's very much in my memory. And I started writing the books after we moved there. The first winter we were there and I was kind of homebound a little bit because I was afraid to get out at that point in the snow, I guess. And I was a little bit homesick. Now I've settled in and the Upper Peninsula feels like home now. But at the time it was writing about Tennessee, about West Tennessee and where I'm from. It was comforting. And I still find that for myself that I can go to Dixie and be home in a way anytime I write without having to deal with the heat and humidity.
But what's worse, a Tennessee mosquito or a Michigan biting fly?
You know, they're both pretty bad. Yeah, I wouldn't want either one of them. Where we live, we don't really have, we live right on the lake, so the lake breezes kind of keep the insects at bay. If you go into the woods, it's a different story.
Now, one of the ongoing problems in Liv's life is her house. She and Larry Joe bought a Victorian that's down on its heel a little bit, and the renovations are taking forever.
They're taking forever because, except for the kitchen, they're basically, the previous owners had ripped out the kitchen. And so Liv's condition for even buying the house was, you know, we have to finish the kitchen. We have to have some semblance of a kitchen. So they had that professionally done, and it's really nice. But the rest of the house, Larry Joe, who runs a trucking firm with his dad, insists on doing himself. And since he works full-time, he doesn't have it all the time to invest. Plus, he's just not as handy as he would like to think he is.
His dad, on the other hand, is very handy with woodworking and such.
Yeah, his dad's handy, but, you know, he works with his dad, so he doesn't want to. He really doesn't want to bring his dad in on the job, which Liv's okay with, but she tries to get him to bring professional help in, which he is loath to do. So it's taking forever.
I'm guessing the house will never be finished as long as the series is going.
No, I don't think it will be. Not unless Larry Joe finally agrees to hire somebody.
Now, you mentioned Liv's mother announces an engagement, and this is the day after a murder. She seems to have a very clear sense of herself that she's not going to be bothered by something as someone else's death for her grand moment.
Yeah, I think she had already decided. He had proposed and she had accepted, and they're announcing it to the family. And no, she would not be someone who would postpone her plans based on somebody else's troubles.
And she is very much a force of nature. Unlike Liv, she is a very tall, imposing person.
Yes. Liv's mom, Virginia Walford, but we call her Mama most of the time because Liv is our narrator. She's a good-hearted person. She's tall, big lady with a big personality and a big voice. She knows very much what she wants, and she tends to get her way.
And then Liv, belatedly, because of all the commotion with Bubba's death, finally figures out, oh God, I'm an event planner and my mother's getting married.
Yes, Mama doesn't mention that right away. In fact, I think Di mentions to Liv, you know, your mother's going to want you to plan this wedding. And she's like, oh no, I hadn't even thought of that, but you're right. And her mother would be kind of her nightmare client.
Bridezilla.
Yes, yes.
With the Bubba Roland death, Liv had no interest in getting involved. She didn't want to be involved in it. But when Earl, her mom's fiancé, comes under suspicion, she reluctantly actually has to get involved in this one against her better judgment.
Yeah, Mama actually implores her, you know, you and Di need to do that thing you do where you find killers, but be careful. Mama's kind of Pollyanna way. But yeah, and Earl is no help because he tells her, keep your mama busy with wedding plans so she's not worried about me. So Liv is kind of pulled. She's trying to clear Earl, but she has to keep Mama busy planning the wedding. And Mama has some pretty outrageous ideas about what she wants.
Let's hear some of those ideas.
They've both had church weddings. They're both widowed, Mama and Earl. And so they decide they want to have something different. And she wants to have the wedding out on Earl's property. He owns a big farm. With a pond that has a little lake in the middle of it, a man-made pond. And he has a big barn where they could have the reception. It's a lovely spot. But she has this vision of swans in the lake, and as if that's not enough, she wants the guests on the banks while she and Earl are ferried out in a gondola-style boat to the little island to say their vows. She has this ever-expanding guest list, even though they have a limited amount of space in the barn for the reception. So Liv is trying to balance all of her mom's crazy wishes with this ever-expanding guest list.
So how does she balance a murder investigation and planning her mother's wedding?
The best she can. She tries to put Mama off a little bit. And then Liv has a very capable assistant. If she had to pay her what she's worth, she couldn't afford her. And so Holly does a lot of the sourcing to find some of these crazy things, including like a gondola or something that would work as a gondola. So she puts Holly to work on things when she's with Mama.
And she wants a Viking gondola to mix vernacular styles.
Yes. Liv has to do a little bit of interpretation what her Mama means. And she understands her mom wants a figurehead or something grand on the front of the boat is really what she's envisioning. So Liv puts her carpenter to work on that.
The series is Liv and Di in Dixie. Di is a local postal carrier. She delivers the mail by foot in town. And she's been dating Sheriff Dave. How's that going?
From what I hear from readers, it's been going too slow. So there is actually a development in this book that I actually listened, you know. Not that I wasn't going to do things, but I thought, you know, I think we need something exciting in this book. So there's something exciting that pops up with Di and the sheriff. They're both gun shy. Di is divorced. Her ex is actually in prison, so she had a really bad experience. And Sheriff Dave's wife passed away from cancer. So, you know, they're both people who have been wounded, and so they kind of take it one step forward, two steps back with their relationship.
Speaking of someone who's lost, Bubba Rowland is one. He has lost his wife and his son. So we can see that despite being a bad person, he's gone through a lot of tragedy in his life as well.
You know, nobody's all bad, and I think the murder victim should be somewhat sympathetic. We don't want anybody to get killed. I mean, nobody deserves to get murdered. And he seems to have a good relationship with his brother, and he seems to really care about his niece in the book. And so, yeah, there's some good things about Bubba.
With the slow development between Di and Sheriff Dave, who's his first name is Euless, is that what his first name is?
Well, he goes by Dave, but yeah, Euless Dave Davidson.
But someone who's having a great time with his love life right now is Deputy Ted Horton, and people are almost getting sick of how much he's in love.
Yeah, he fell in love in the last book, and Liv and Di kind of tried to matchmake, although it actually kind of fell in place without a lot of help from them. This Daisy, who's kind of an odd girl, but she's a good match for him. But now they're having second thoughts, like, did we do the right thing? And Sheriff Dave especially doesn't like hearing about his love life.
Now, the book is dedicated to your Southern mama, Jean.
Yes.
How much of Jean are in your books?
None directly. I would say my mother is not Mama. But now, don't get me wrong. My mother is a character in her own right, like most Southern ladies. But she's just not this character.
Has she complained about not being in the book, or have you slipped her in the book in another guise?
No. She hasn't complained. She actually thinks some things that happen with Mama, she thinks is her. And I'm like, if it makes her happy, sure. As long as she realizes she can't tell me how to write the character, I'm going to write it the way I want to.
So we've had three installments so far. What kind of party is the next book going to be based on?
Okay, the next book, we're going to Vegas. Mom and Earl decide after all that maybe they want to do something different. And so they go out to Vegas, and an Elvis impersonator ends up dead. And remarkably enough, Liv gets pulled into that one, too, because her cousin, who is a budding Elvis impersonator, gets arrested for the murder. Drama follows her everywhere she goes, or she takes it with her. But anyway, so yeah. But we're still connected to Dixie. Holly's back home working hard, and it's an event they've already planned, but she's having to actually put it on without Liv there. So there's constant phone calls. And then we end up back in Dixie at the end. And there's a big party at the end, of course.
So with the books having kind of pun themes based on parties, how challenging is it to come up with another name? And what is the name of the next book?
You know, it is kind of hard. My publisher wanted to go with the Liv and Di in Dixie. They liked that tag with the Southern theme for the series name. But that meant that we didn't have anything about Party Planner in the series name, which they like to brand. So that meant they want the word party in every title, which gets kind of tough after a while. So the first book was Death Crashes the Party, and the second one was It's Your Party, Die If You Want To. So for the third one, we went with One Fate in the Grave. And I suggested all three of those, by the way. They weren't necessarily the first title I suggested. My editor didn't always love those, but I did have input, and they went with one I chose. For the next book, you know, I was having a hard time, and my editor wasn't really happy with any of the names I had come up with. But my agent came up with a great title, since there's a wedding about to happen in the fourth book. It's called Till Death Do Us Party. So yeah, that's the next one. But my agent came up with that one. And if my agent had her way, we would always use the word party. I slipped Fet in, or Fate, because I wanted something different. And I'll tell you this, this is just between us, okay? I had suggested this title, another title, with my first editor, and she thought it was cute, but she said no. But I have a new editor now, so I may try this again. I would like a future book to be called Who's Soiree Now? We'll see if that ever flies.
We could have a to-do of some sort. The big sleepover?
That might be a little provocative.
It'd be a kid's party.
Oh, okay.
So you're currently wrapping up your tour. It's been an unusual one, hasn't it?
Yes, I'm calling this my sofa surfing tour, because the only way I could really afford to do it was to have signings and events in places where I had a place to crash. And my friends and family have been very kind to put me up. My husband and I have been road tripping it from Michigan down to Memphis. But yeah, I did a great signing with author Julia Buckley just outside Chicago. And I did a signing just outside St. Louis with cozy author Stephanie Blackmore. So yeah, and not connected to this particular leg, but in August, I'll be doing a signing in Madison, Wisconsin with author Annalise Ryan that I'm really looking forward to. So it's been a great trip.
So have you ever crashed a party, especially back in your days as a journalist?
Yeah, well, maybe. I've definitely crashed weddings and funerals.
For what purpose?
Oh, well, sometimes as a journalist, and sometimes just, you know, curiosity.
A little research?
Yeah. If you kind of sort of know somebody, you know, you can just show up.
Before we started, we were taking pictures all around the studio. Where can people see pictures from your trip?
I will be posting them to my Facebook, Vicky Fee Author, and you can friend me. I would love to see you there. That's my profile. Also, I have the Live and Die in Dixie page on Facebook. And I blog with chicksonthecase.com with five other groovy, cozy writers. You can find me there at chicksonthecase.com.
Thanks so much, Vicky.
Thank you.
Vicky Fee is the author of One Fate in the Grave, the third installment of the Live and Die in Dixie mystery series, which is published by Kensington. I'm Stephen Usry, and this is Book Talk.
Thank you for joining us today. Book Talk is recorded in the studios of WIPL in Memphis, Tennessee. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at WIPLFM@gmail.com or write to us at Book Talk, care of WIPL, 3030 Poplar Avenue, Memphis, Tennessee, 38111, or call us at 901-415-2752. You can find information on upcoming tapings and broadcasts of Book Talk, as well as download podcasts at our blog, WIPLFMBookTalk.blogspot.com.
This recording of Book Talk is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license for the United States. You are free to share, copy, distribute, or display and perform this work. But there are restrictions. Nothing in this license impairs or restricts WIPL's moral rights. Thank you for listening to Book Talk.